We're continuing with our parsha, Parshat Toldot. And when we begin our parsha, so we have to discern that there is a marked difference between our relationship with Esav and our relationship with Yishmael. Yishmael is the son of the maid. There's no question, there's no challenge. He is very clearly a different entity. Esav is Yaakov's twin. Esav, the Edomites, which we traditionally learn that they developed into the Christian kingdom, the powers of the West. Esav goes by the sun. You guys notice? Their calendar is a solar calendar. Yaakov is also called the sun. Shemesh. Yaakov in Yosef's dream, Yaakov is the sun. After Yaakov fights the angel, the Torah refers to Yaakov as the sun. Esav and Yaakov, there are two forces in this world. And there are two opposing forces in the world. It didn't have to look that way. But Esav chose for it to look that way. And from the beginning of time, we see that you can really sum up the human choice as the choice between the here and the now, and the choice between the long term. When the Torah wants to describe Yaakov Avinu, the Torah describes Yaakov Avinu as Yoshev Ohalim. Why does the Torah use the term Yoshev? Yoshev means one who takes time in the tent. He is sitting, Yishuv Adat, he is taking time in the tent to grow. Esav is Tzayid, he's hunting, he's a man of action, the now, the here. Running, catch that animal, kill the animal. This is a challenge within every person. This is a challenge from the beginning of time. Adam, the great failure of Adam Arishon, was that he was quick to take from the forbidden fruit. Wait a little bit. Chazal say, had he waited an hour, Hashem would have said, make kiddush on those grapes. Take the grapes, make wine, make kiddush. No, he took it now. And that's the challenge. The Rav Sadia Gaon writes in his introduction to Mishle that if you want to summarize all of Mishle, the concept, the one concept, that the theme of Mishle is this idea, that the Torah trains us to take our time and that the worthwhile investment is in the long run. Consistency in the long run. And we're going to see this theme repeat itself throughout the lives of Yaakov and Esav. Esav rapes. Yaakov waits till he's 60 to get married. Esav murders. Yaakov does everything in his power to avoid any conflict. Long term. Esav says, let's go together now. Yaakov says, we'll still meet. There's time. Yaakov by name is Yaakov, will ultimately overcome. Yaakov, Akev, the heel, the end. We're going to get there. And Esav is born a ready-made man. Esav comes from the word asui. He's ready. Esav is like an ox. We say an ox from the day he's born is called an ox. Other animals develop. They have different names as they develop. Shol ben yomoy karui shol. An ox from day one is called an ox. That's Esav. He's born with a beard. He's born with hair on his back. He's ready to rumble. That's Esav. Yaakov, smooth skin. He has to grow. Slowly develops. But ultimately, Yaakov, he will overcome. When Avram is blessed, so Avram is told his children will be like the sand of the earth. What does it mean they'll be like the sand of the earth? We spend our whole life walking on the sand. Until our death, when the sand covers us. So who wins ultimately? You spend your whole life stepping on it, but at the end the sand overcomes. By the same token, that's the idea of the Jewish people, that's the idea of Yaakov, that as much as you're going to step on them, they're still going to be there. You're not going to annihilate them. Yaakov, he's going to be there at the end, at the Akev. Esav looks at Yaakov, and Esav understands the word Yaakov to stem from the word okba. Okba means crooked. He says, Yaakov does everything crooked. Tricked me here, tricked me there. But really, Yaakov means the one that will ultimately overcome. So our parasha begins with Yitzchak and Rivka. And Yitzchak is in an interesting position as far as world history goes. Hashem has already identified Yitzchak as the future of Avram. Hashem has already said there's going to be a fourth generation that will ultimately inherit the land, and Yitzchak is generation number two. Or generation number one. It would seem that Yitzchak's future is guaranteed. He's got nothing to worry about. Yet in last week's parasha, Hashem sent him a rude awakening. There he is, bound and on the verge of being slaughtered. Certainly seems like his future ain't guaranteed, right? They don't have children. But Yitzchak is in a different world. You see, when Yitzchak needs a wife, it doesn't bother him. His father sends the servant. Why didn't Yitzchak go? Why didn't Yitzchak send the servant? Why wasn't Yitzchak even invited to partake of the discussion? Because Yitzchak sees his role in the world is to continue and develop what Avram did. And so Yitzchak doesn't see the need right now. Avram sees the need. So Avram sends the servant. And then Avram recommends to Yitzchak. Chazal have a whole discussion about how Avram tells Yitzchak, you know, this is the girl, and this is the worthwhile, and this is what you should do. Chazal say, Avram even gave him instructions on chasam classes. What are you supposed to do the first night? He said, Chazal go down to those details. Advice. Avram explains to Yitzchak everything, down to the nitty gritty. Yitzchak's in a different world. And so Rivka comes and marries such a holy person, and they don't have kids. And Yitzchak ain't too concerned. It's okay. Just like he wasn't concerned about getting married, he's not concerned about the kids. Hashem's running the world. Rivka isn't too happy about it. So Rivka comes to Yitzchak and says, you know, we're going to have kids. And Yitzchak says, don't worry. You're going to find many times in life that the wife is concerned and the husband says, don't worry. And the Torah tells us, Vayetah Yitzchak lenochach ishto. Yitzchak prayed as a result of the argument with his wife. He wasn't even about to pray. I'm going to talk to God. Don't worry. He's taking care of the world. And Rivka comes and says, Lenochach. Lenochach comes from the word vikuach. Rivka comes and argues. And she says, no. Your father did stuff. Your father prayed. Your father worked to have children. Go talk to God. So after Rivka argues with him, Yitzchak agrees to daven. And when he davens opposite her. Chazal tell us that it's always good, you can daven when the person's in front of you. You visit someone who's ill, you didn't fulfill Bikur Cholim unless you prayed. And when you pray, so then you should pray right there. You could say, Hashem, heal him, please. You know, you begin with praise, you ask your request, you end with praise, but the fact that you're in front of the person carries a certain amount of weight.
Literally opposite someone?
Right. Nochach means opposite also. No, because it says if you're davening next to someone who you have to pray for, so then you don't even have to mention the person's name. Kel Narifon Alda, Moshe Rabbeinu prays about Miriam. Hashem heal her. He doesn't say her name. So Rivka gets pregnant. And when Rivka's pregnant, so the pregnancy doesn't play itself out the way she thought it would. She is in such pain that she's not sure she wants to live through this pregnancy. And she goes and asks other women, and they tell her pregnancy is uncomfortable, but not this bad. What's she supposed to do? So the pasuk says, Vateilech lidrosh et Hashem. She went to seek out Hashem. And here we have a fantastic insight. Rashi learns, Vateilech lidrosh et Hashem. She went to ask Hashem, what's going to be? Meaning, one of the great challenges in life is that we don't know what's going to be. If you tell a person in the middle of the Holocaust, you're going to live, you're going to make it out alive, it's going to be tough, but believe me, 5 years down the road, there'll be no Germany, and you're going to be liberated, and you're going to have children and grandchildren and an amazing life. It's a different life. One of the greatest challenges in this world, one of the greatest human challenges, is that you don't know what's going to be. A guy's dating. Am I ever going to get married? If someone would guarantee me I'd get married, I could live with the fact that I'm single till I'm 55. People are married and they don't have kids. If someone would guarantee me I'll have a kid at 35, 40, okay, I could live with it. If God would have told Avram, don't worry, at age 100, you're going to have a child, he could live with it. So this drive to know the future is what leads people to all kinds of funny things. A guy came to me tonight. He said, I don't know what to do about dating. So I said, yeah. So he said, well, I went in Ben Yehuda, and there was this man with a beard. You paid him 30 shekel, and he read your palm, and he told you what your future holds. And then he read my palm. I paid him 30 shekel. True story tonight. He read my palm, and he said to me, and he tells me what the man said, and what am I supposed to make of it? I almost said that. You know, I'm a rabbi. I couldn't say that. I restrained myself from saying that. I wanted to say exactly that. Pay me 30 shekel. I'll read your palm and I'll tell you things you understand. 25. But the truth is that this is part of the human condition. That tremendous desire to know the future. And this is what has led people to all kinds of funny things. Now, this guy's not unusual. All of us are sometimes in situations where we're dying to know what's going to be in the future. Oh, so I didn't say what the guy did was right. I'm just saying the desire, the want to know is a part of the human condition. It is one of the great challenges of this world. The Torah says, Tamim Tiyeim Hashem, behold with Hashem, don't worry, Hashem's running the show. Put your confidence in him. Do what you have to do. Do your ishtadlut, but put your confidence in him. So according to Rashi, what Rivka did was go and ask, Hashem, tell me, where's this all going? I'm in such pain, tell me. And Hashem answers her. So that's one kind of conversation. Rivka is discussing with Hashem and asking Hashem, going to the sages to ask Hashem, to the prophets to ask Hashem. She wants to know where's it all headed. Doesn't say the pain subsided after this, but now she understood. You could deal with pain if you understand it. She knew when she went to Hashem that pregnancy only lasts 9 months. That wasn't the question here. The question was why? Why? Ah, if I understand why, then it could work. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says she went to ask Hashem what's going to be. No. Lidrosh et Hashem, throughout Tanakh, says the Ramban, means to pray. She went to pray to Hashem. She's in pain. She asks Hashem, ow, it hurts. Rabbon Shalom, help me. Doesn't say Hashem helped her. It says Hashem answered her. Hashem said to her, there's a whole future inside of you. And that future consists of a continued struggle to the point that they can't even be in the same womb without fighting. Meaning Hashem put within them the forces that are antithetical to one another. So, one thing Hashem says, don't worry, these are twins. Another thing Hashem says, this is all because of the wars that are yet to come. But the Ramban adds, but now it's going to calm down. So, Rivka continues the pregnancy. What choice does she have? And when she finally gives birth, so lo and behold, they're really twins. And the first one comes out, he is all red. So, red, we are told, tells us of a predisposition. Esav did not have to be a murderer. The Talmud tells us that there are people who are born with predispositions for blood. So they could be a butcher. They could be a moel, they could circumcise. King David was born red. When it came time to anoint him, it says the prophet Shmuel looked at him and shuddered. He said, I see Asaph. God, what do you want me to anoint him for? He's going to kill. And Hashem said, yeah, but he's going to kill with a license. He's going to kill those that need to be killed. He's going to be an amazing warrior, but he's going to kill to save people. He's not going to kill rampantly like Asaph does. Don't you see his eyes? Don't you see that his eyes reflect that he's a person that has self-control? You can't put him with Asaph, a different person. David is gematria yad. He is, so to speak, God's hand in the world. What is a king called in the Torah terminology? Ki yad al keis ha. He is God's hand, God's representative on God's throne in this world. The king's job is to implement justice, and sometimes implementing justice means going to fight battles. So yes, he's going to kill, but he's going to kill in accordance with what I want, says God. He's not killing what he wants. A world of a difference between Esav and David. So Esav is born, and his skin is flaming red, and he's got hair all over, and his father Yitzchak sees him, and he figures maybe there's a problem with his blood. That's why he's all red. So Yitzchak doesn't circumcise him. Yitzchak says he might die. If he's so red, it could be there's a problem with the blood, and if he gets such an operation, he might never stop bleeding, and he might bleed to death. So Yitzchak waits, and after a few years, he sees that his nature is that his blood is red, and even though he gets cuts and stuff, he doesn't die from it, he's fine. So he realizes, okay, I had a boy who was born red. He figures he'll wait till the kid is 13 years old, just like Yishmael had his circumcision at 13. He will circumcise Esav at 13, but when Esav is 13, he says, no, Dad, I can't handle that, no way. So Esav doesn't have a circumcision. Esav and Yaakov grow up, and until they grow up, you couldn't know where either one was headed. They were both cute, they were both nice, they were both sweet, they both seemed fine. When the kids grew up, and it's up to them to make their own decisions, suddenly you saw the choices they made. Esav is a hunter, and Yaakov sits and works on developing philosophically, developing his morals, developing his values. He's working and learning and studying and growing. And again, the Torah stresses the fact that he sat. And here we have to maybe pause for a minute to discuss one of the great weaknesses of Machon Meir. We're a Machon. We can only take you so far. Meaning we're here to take people from the beginning, from Aleph Beis, to a point where they could move forward to a regular yeshiva. We're not a yeshiva. We're not built to be a yeshiva. But that doesn't mean that when you finish with Machon Meir, you're done learning. It's just the beginning. Machon Meir is the starter. But you got to keep the flame growing. This is the beginning. This is the first step. You got to move on from here. Our goal and our success is when you guys take what you've learned here and keep learning. So if you have a job, so you take the nights, you go to a good shir, you go to Daf Yomi. This is the beginning. Very often people feel like, I graduated Machon Meir, great, okay. It's very nice, it's admirable. I'm not coming to belittle what people accomplish here, but you have to realize it's the first step. True growth comes from Yoshev Olim. What Yaakov Avinu did. You got to sit and learn. There's no alternative to that. You can't assume, I did it, I know everything, Machon Meir. Very good, you came to a starter's yeshiva. This is a Machon, this isn't a yeshiva. Our goal is to give you the tools to go from here to a yeshiva, to go from here to growing. But this is the starting, this is where you get your tools. You're learning your Aleph Beis, you're learning how to read, you're learning the Parsha, this is all basic. From here you got to grow. And you have to realize that part of growth, the integral part of growth, is taking time to sit and learn. And that means that in the time that you're going to work, after you leave the Machon, you have to set time, be it in the morning before davening, be it after mincha during your lunch break to learn a little Mishnayos, and at nights. That's why I'm so big on night seder, because most people, their main time for learning in life is nights. Most people are working most of the day. You got to take an hour or two a night and really learn. There's no other way. And whoever ain't going up is going down. You don't stay status quo. You got to be working to go up. And you're not a success just because you finished Machon Meir. You're a potential success. You've started. You've made tremendous headway. The fact that you came to Machon Meir is tremendous. It's tremendous steps. But in order to lead a proper Jewish life, you got to learn. You got to keep moving. It's not enough. Now you're getting the tools to keep moving, but you got to keep moving. It's not over when you leave. It's just the beginning when you leave. And that's up to you. So some guys keep coming to this class. Fine. Some guys keep coming to other classes. You got to graduate from that. Move on to higher levels. This is the beginning. And you have to keep learning. There's a whole Shas out there. There's a whole Shulchan Aruch out there. There are a million of Midrashim out there. This is the beginning. And the key is to sit and work. But there's no shortcuts. No one made it by, even the super geniuses had to work. No one made it quickly. And I'm not talking about being the biggest Gadol HaDor, even though some of you have the potential for that. I'm talking about being a good Baal HaBayit, living a life of halacha. In order to do it, you got to keep learning. Learning Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, learning Mishnayos, learning the Parsha, but to keep learning. So Yaakov's hallmark is that he is Yoshev Oalim. Esav is Ish Sadeh. Sadeh is an acronym for Shofech Dam HaAdam, spills human blood. And so Avram was promised by Hashem that he will pass away a peaceful death. Ve'ata tavo el avotecha b'shalom. Hashem said, even though your descendants will be enslaved, even though I'm giving you this prophecy about how your descendants will suffer, you will pass away in peace. And so on the day that Avram Avinu passes away, that is the day that Esav becomes a public murderer. What happens? Esav sees Avram Avinu's arch enemy. Throughout Avram Avinu's life, there was one person who wanted him dead. Who was that?
Nimrod.
Right. And so on this day, Nimrod has told Esav that he can't go hunting. He owns all these fields. He owns all these forests. And to make a long story short, Esav murders Nimrod. So Nimrod and Avram die on the same day. And it's interesting that Nimrod is murdered by Avram's grandson. But Avram dies a few hours earlier. Because even though it's Nimrod that's being killed, the fact that he's being murdered by Avram's own grandson is something that would have caused Avram pain. Avram wouldn't have been happy about it. And so Avram Avinu passes away, and a few hours later, or a few minutes later, we don't know, sometime later that day, Esav murders Nimrod. Now, when Adam was in the Garden of Eden, after Adam and Rishon ate the forbidden fruit, so he recognized his nakedness. So Hashem made him clothes. Clothes that were made by Hashem, those clothes had godly powers. And they were passed down until Noah took them into the ark, and when they left the ark, Ham took them, and then his descendant Nimrod took them. And so Nimrod would walk around with this suit that was God made, and people thought that Nimrod had godly powers, because that suit did have godly powers. You could go hunting and a bear wouldn't touch you. So of course Nimrod could kill bears. People thought it was because Nimrod was a god. Look at how many bears Nimrod killed. Look at how many lions Nimrod killed. No animal would touch him when he's wearing that clothing. That's part of the gift that God gave Adam when he gave him that suit. So Esav, well, he's a special kind of animal. Esav kills Nimrod and takes the suit. And he comes in. He just raped a girl that was married. He murdered, and he knows that this is the day Grandpa Avram passed away. And his father Yitzchak is sitting in mourning, and his brother Yaakov is making lentil soup for the father, and Esav comes in, his hands all bloody, huffing and puffing from the field, and he's worried, maybe Nimrod's men are going to come after him. He tells Yaakov, boy, am I hungry, what you got there? It's a nezida dashim, it's not fully cooked, it's just boiled. It's not even cooked yet. Esav says, give me some of that. Yaakov says, Grandpa died today. Avram passed away. I'm making this for Yitzchak. Esav says, fine, give me that. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I just went hunting. Yaakov says, do you understand what it means to be part of Avram's family? Do you understand what it means to be a descendant of Yitzhak? Do you understand what the family name means to you? Esav says, yeah, I know what it means. It means absolutely nothing to me. I take no pride that I'm a descendant of Avram and Yitzhak. You know, I'm a gangster. So it's no honor to me to say I'm the son of a pious man. If my father was a big gangster, then I could take pride in that. But the fact that my father is a pious man and I'm a gangster, I don't gain anything from that. I don't take the family name with me anywhere. It's not something that I need. What do I need? This rights to the firstborn. It's no honor to me. Hine anochi olech lamut. I walk on the verge of death, Esav says. I spend my life killing, hunting. I don't need. Lama zeli bechora. Why do I need the rights to be called, I'm the continuation of the family, I'm the firstborn? Who needs it? To me, it makes no difference. Esav says to Yaakov, let me tell you something, buddy. Grandpa Avram, he was a pretty God-fearing man, right? Very pious. Where did he end up? I don't know, seems 6 feet under to me. He's dead, right? So what do I need this for? You're telling me I have a right to be the continuation of a pious family. I didn't notice that pious people don't die. Hine anochi olech lamud. Esav says, I'm going to die, whether I'm pious or not. Look at Grandpa Avram, he died. Everyone dies. So what do I need this piety thing? I should be the firstborn. Give me the lentil soup, you take the rights to the firstborn, and let's finish this. Yaakov says, really? Okay. Promise me you'll never turn back on this. Promise me this is mine. Let's make a deal. Gives him bread, gives him to eat, gives him to drink. They cut a deal. And Esav walks out and laughs. Vayivez Esav et habchora. The Torah records, Esav walked out and laughed and said, boy, what a fool my brother is. Who needs that right? But Yitzchak doesn't hear any of this. And Yitzchak has a special relationship with Esav. Yitzchak sees the mitzvos of Esav. Esav is a fantastic doer of Kibbud Av Va'Im. The Talmud tells us that Esav would have a special suit he'd wear. When he'd come to honor his father, he wouldn't come all sweaty from the field. He'd go shower, put on his perfume, put on a special suit, and come in and serve his father. The Talmud says, the Amoraim said we could learn from Esav. The Amoraim said about themselves, we don't do as good a job. Esav was some guy when it came to that. So Yitzchak gets such Kibbud Av Va'Im. His son goes out and risks his life for him, slaughters animals for him, brings him the most delicious venison and meat and everything. He's taking good care of him. Yitzchak sees the mitzvos of Esav. And there's a certain plan that has to play itself out here. Partially, there's the idea that Yitzchak has to bless Yaakov. And if Yitzchak would realize what a murderer Esav is, Yitzchak could never attain the happiness necessary to get that level of prophecy to give Yaakov the blessing Yaakov needs to get. So Hashem keeps it hidden from him. Hashem makes Yitzchak blind. Hashem makes it so Yitzchak sees the good in Esav. Yitzchak also sees the good in Yaakov. He's not stupid. And Yitzchak, as we see, plans on giving Esav a blessing of material good. You will notice that in the first blessing where Yitzchak is tricked, Yitzchak does not give the rights to be the continuation of Avraham Avinu. Yitzchak does not give the rights to the land of Israel. The blessing is focused on the material good. And in Yitzchak's mind, my son Esav has been taking such good care of me, I should give him a blessing to continue having success in the material world, even if it means that Yaakov is to be subservient to Esav. Yitzchak thinks that Esav is still the continuation of the family. And there is the potential that Esav will serve the physical side and Yaakov will be the spiritual side and they'll have a partnership. Rivka assumes that Yitzchak knows that original prophecy that they're going to be fighting. They're not going to be partners. They're going to be on opposite ends of the world. When one is up, the other is down. There's no partnership here. But when it's too late, Rivka realizes that as pious as her husband is, that's one prophecy he didn't get. So throughout the time that the kids are growing up, things are okay. When the period comes that the kids are 46 years old, they're not little kids anymore. Esav already has a slew of kids. Yaakov's not yet married. Yitzchak becomes an old man. He reaches within 5 years of his father's death. And Yitzchak starts thinking, it's his birthday, it's Pesach, maybe he's going to die. So Yitzchak calls in Esav and says, son, bring me some good food. And as I get satiated from that good food, I will be happier, I will be calmer, and the physical world can arouse a person's spirit, and from that I will be able to bless you. Rivka hears this and says, oh my gosh, what's he going to do? Rivka's right. But the ball's already rolling. Yeah. No.
No.
No. Now, let's pause our story for a minute. And I want to share with you a Dvar Torah that Rav Pesen Zatzal used to say, which is one of the most powerful Divrei Torah I ever heard. Rav Pesen used to tell us the following. He used to say, if you'd see Esav and Yaakov walking down the street, you'd see two people, let's talk in our terminology today, you'd see two yeshiva guys, both holding a sefer under their arm, both of them with their tzitzis out of their pants, and long forelocks. Only one of them has payas that are a little bit longer, and his tzitzis are just slightly longer, and that's Esav. Because Esav is all about showing you how good he is. He's not about being good. He's about showing you that he's good. And so, if you talk to Yaakov in learning, you'd see a guy that learned from the beginning to the end of one masechta, two masechtas, but he doesn't yet master all shas. You talk to Esav, every tractate you want to talk about, Esav could impress you. Because everything Esav does, he does incompletely. He does with one goal in mind. How can I impress people to think that I'm pious? He has no interest in really accomplishing. His goal in life is to impress the other. And so he does many things in an incomplete fashion. And he manages to impress his father. He manages to impress anyone who doesn't have the capacity to see beyond the facade. Esav is a guy who would be appointed as the Gadol Hador. If it were up to us, we'd be so impressed with Esav. Anything you talk to him about, he knows how to impress you. If it's about the impression, Esav makes the best impression. Yaakov Ish Tam. The strength of Yaakov is that he's whole. He doesn't start something without completing it. He doesn't accomplish as quickly as Esav does. Esav has potential to be bigger than Yaakov. Yitzchak wasn't a fool that he loved Esav. Esav could have been much bigger than Yaakov. Esav had the brains for it. Esav could have been giant. But his focus was, let me do enough to impress people. His focus was not, let me really be whole. Yaakov's focus is, I have to be whole. It's not about impressing the other, it's about me completing one thing after another. And Rav Pesen Zatzal used to say that this is what we have to strive for. And that to me this is such a powerful Dvar Torah, because I think that we live in a day and age where we're living the lives of Esav. We write emails, no one thinks about capitalizing periods. We post things on the internet, it's already commonplace that you see errors throughout. The concept of doing something in a whole fashion is non-existent. We don't work in that way. But the truth is, it's a problem. The hallmark of Yaakov is that Yaakov Ish Tam, he does things in a whole way. And again, that goes back to what we began with. The long-term goal. If my goal is short-term, let them think I'm smart, so then all I have to do is know enough to impress them. If my goal is long-term, let me really be smart, so then I work from the ground up, and I work methodically and slowly to really know. But that's hard. It's less impressive. It's less rewarding. That's the two opposing forces in the world of Yaakov and Esav. And every one of us has both within us. So I'm still reeling from this Dvar Torah. I find it a hard Dvar Torah to swallow, but an important Dvar Torah to swallow. So Yitzchak sends Esav out, and Esav goes out hunting, and he's very good at what he does. He wants to catch two animals. He catches one, ties him up, and goes running for the second. And Hashem sends an angel to untie the first one. To let the first one out, to release him. So Esav catches the second animal, he comes to get the first one, and the first one's gone. He says, how could that happen? I thought I tied him well. Okay, he ties the second animal real fast and runs out to catch another animal. He's running, he's hunting, finally he catches the second animal, brings it in, goes back, and hey, the first one's gone. What's going on here? And this happens time and again. Hashem is making sure that Yaakov has his time. Rivka calls in Yaakov, says, son, I heard your father, he wants to bless Esav. I want you going in there. Yaakov says, no. Rivka says, you listen to me, you go get me two animals, two sheep, I'm going to make food the way your father likes it. Yaakov starts crying, 46-year-old man, he's weeping. Mom, dad's a holy man. If he curses me, I'm finished. Rivka says, you go get me the animals, and don't worry about the curse. I take it on me. Either, according to some commentaries, she told him something foolish. The commentaries say, women will sometimes promise you things that are ridiculous. It's on me. What do you mean it's on you? If it curses me, it's on me. It's not on you. Others say that Rivka came from a family of swindlers. Rivka says, you know what will happen if your father catches you? You know what he's going to say? This is my wife's genes in this boy. He's going to blame me. Don't worry, I know what's going to happen. You go bring me the animals. Yaakov brings the animals and stands there weeping. He doesn't want to do it. Rivka comes like he's a little boy. She puts the food in his hands and says, son, you go in there. He says, but mom, dad can feel me. I'm smooth. Esav's hairy. No problem. She stuffs some pieces of the goat's hairs under his arms. And you have hairs coming out of from under his shoulders. She takes that special coat that Esav got from Nimrod. Remember, he murdered Nimrod to get that coat. She throws it on Yaakov. She says, this is what Esav always wears when he goes in to serve dad. You wear that, you'll be okay. She sticks in some goat's hairs into his shirt so that he has hairs coming out of the back of his collar. And she leads him in like a little boy. In comes the angel and gives him a bottle of wine from the Garden of Eden. Pasuk doesn't say she gave him wine. We have a tradition that the Malach came and gave him wine from Gan Eden. And he walks in. And he's standing there, and this is antithetical to Yaakov. What's he supposed to do now? His mom just put him there. Who are you, son? I'm your Bechor. Yes, he is the Bechor. He's the continuation of this family. So we know the story. Yitzchak feels him. Yitzchak kisses him. Yitzchak smells the Garden of Eden. Yitzchak blesses him. And when Yitzchak blesses him, he blesses him with the material things in the world. V'yiten lecha Elokim. He begins with the Vav, with the continuation. Blessings very often are marked by their capacity to continue. We often think that a blessing has to be an invention, invent the wheel. No. The Chafetz Chaim said, a true blessing takes your potential and realizes it. Blessings cannot invent. The Chafetz Chaim said, if you try to bless someone with something that he cannot do, the guy studied to be an engineer, and you bless him, you should be a very successful doctor. But I don't know anything about medicine. The blessings are not going to work. Blessing is the capacity to take what's there in potential and realize it. The blessing has to fit the recipient. It has to be a continuation. It has to be a connector. It has to be a growth of something that's already there. V'yitin lecha Elokim, and God should give you. What are you beginning the blessing with? And. Because it's not the starting point. The blessing is a continuation. It's taking what's there and growing it. And so Yitzchak blesses Yaakov, and Hashem is taking care of Esav, keeping him busy. And finally Esav comes huffing and puffing in, just as Yitzchak finishes the blessing, Yaakov walks up to the door and he hears Esav huffing and puffing. Now, Yitzchak has a problem with his eyes, so he's sitting in a dark room. And so Yaakov slips behind the door. He has the tray, the leftovers in his tray. And he stands there behind the door holding his breath as Esav charges in to talk to his father. Esav doesn't see Yaakov. It's a dark room. Yaakov stands still. Esav charges by him and Yaakov slips out. Esav runs in and says, "Dad, get up, I got you the food." Yitzchak says, "Who are you?" Esav says, "I'm your first son, Esav. What do you mean, Dad? You're Esav?" Yitzchak starts thinking. And Yitzchak is now going to talk. And on a different occasion, we have to discuss why Yitzchak tells Esav what he does, what Yitzchak tells Esav, and I guess that'll have to remain, maybe next week we'll get back to this point in the story.